Jag mitt batteri stänger av en cell.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Swiss Pats. I am Don Delco, and joining me, as always, is Susie Lyon.
G'day, Don.
G'day. How'd that sound? Terrible?
Terrible.
Yeah.
But thank you for trying.
I try. I do. I just do it mostly because it makes you laugh, and it's so bad. It's kind of like when I try and pronounce German words.
Yeah.
It just doesn't end well for anybody. We got a great show for you this week. We have Kat Cullen from WRS joining us. Kat is on the midday show, and she's got quite an interesting story that we'll get to coming up. So, welcome. It is getting, February's kind of winding down here. I mean, February went fast, and we're kind of getting to the end. But we're still kind of in the heart of ski season here in Switzerland, and I have a little confession to make.
You love it. You've decided skiing is the sport for you.
No, it's still golf. I still wish I was playing golf. Right. However, I kind of dig it.
What?
I'm kind of liking skiing. Yeah. So I have graduated from the ski school. I am no longer a kangaroo or snake or blue prince. I am actually on a mountain skiing down.
What you're telling me is that someone slapped you on the back and said, good job, Don. And you were like, oh, well, yeah, I like this. I like this positive reinforcement.
I do enjoy some positive reinforcement.
Because no one does that at golf, do they?
No, nobody cares. I try and talk to my wife about my golf game. She just...
I meant because you're not
glosses over.
Enough. That
cuts deep.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That cuts deep. That's okay. That's fair. That's fair. All's fair game on this podcast. So... where was I going before you knocked me off my line?
Yeah. You were telling me how much you love skiing.
So, yeah, this is my second winter in Switzerland doing it, and I've gained some confidence. I kind of like it. I do. I know. You're looking at me like I have nine heads. And I know your disdain for skiing is prevalent. You don't care for it. It's okay.
Thank you.
But
can't believe you've gone over to the dark side.
I did, and it was close. Like there was times where I was like, "Nope, I'm done." But I continued to push for the sake of my family, my kids to learn. My wife is really good. Like we go down these blue runs, and she's just like flying by me, going on these bumps, doing these little like shushing things, and I'm still doing the pizza all the way down the hill. But I'm getting down the hill.
Good job.
And it's fun. It's kind of fun. It's kind of fun.
Yep.
It's kind of fun.
All right.
It's a good workout, too.
There's people listening that are agreeing with you. It's just, I'm not.
I know. Just, the other side of the table is not on the same page.
It's just frosty like the snow on a mountain.
Ooh, well done. So the reason I bring up skiing is, one, to it's, you know, kind of the national sport here in Switzerland, wouldn't you think? Or pastime, maybe?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah. People really love it.
They sure do.
There is a fella who was the head of the Swiss International Ski Federation who got into some trouble recently.
Bum, bum.
His name is Gianfranco Casper.
Awesome name.
It is. And he has he's resigned his position because he made some controversial remarks on climate change and environmentalists.
Uh-oh, Gianfranco. What are you going to do now?
So, well, he's got more time to ski, I guess.
Yeah.
So, Gianfranco, who is a 75-year-old fella, has said that, quote, it's easier to deal with dictators than environmentalists in an interview with the Tagesanzeiger newspaper in January.
Right.
He also made light of climate change, pointing to the low temperatures at last year's South Korea Winter Olympics.
Which is a whole nother issue.
A whole nother issue. Yeah, this fella got into a little bit of issue, and he has since apologized his comments because he knew they were wrong. He said, we're not meant to be taken literally, but this was not clear in the final story. So he's kind of blaming the newspaper of twisting his words. So the Swiss newspaper decided to publish the audio clips from their interview that basically it shows exactly what he said and exactly what they printed. So yeah, this guy said some stupid stuff, and I don't know why. It just,
I mean, the guy is 75 years old. Why is he the head of anything except for long walks on a Swiss mountain?
I just don't get it. You know, I really don't. And I don't understand why it's, you may not agree or with, you know, climate change is a real thing or not, but why just fluff it off and to not kind of look at it seriously? I don't get it.
And my like confusion with the whole climate change thing is just because it's cold outside doesn't mean that it's not real. Or just because it's hot in the summer doesn't mean climate change isn't real. Like,
there's a,
the today's weather doesn't dictate climate change.
Right.
That's what I don't get, why people don't get.
I don't understand, because I didn't learn like, much in school.
Oh, it's really cold today and it's winter, therefore climate change mustn't exist.
Yeah, I didn't learn much in school, but I learned this basic fact in school that climate is not the same as weather.
Right.
They're two different things.
You learned more than me then.
Okay. Mr. Feel very fancy now. I should probably go get my master's degree. So yeah, it's
probably not in climate change.
No, probably not.
Or weatherology.
Yeah, but this guy is just not in a good place. So he has resigned, he's gone away. Hopefully someone with a little bit more open mind.
Well, I mean,
can be in,
let's
his
go
position.
Back to his age. He doesn't need to go and get another job. He's going to be fine.
He'll make ends meet.
You know,
yeah.
He's not a 39-year-old that made a stupid comment. He's...
Why are you looking at me? You said my age and said a stupid comment.
Wow.
That happens a lot.
Daily,
yeah.
So he's going to be all right. He's retired, actually. That's what's happened.
Yeah. You, sir, you go away.
Yeah.
You're now retired.
Yeah. And they're like, done. We'll say you resigned, but really you're retired. Go live your life. Your climate change denial life. To be fair, it doesn't say he denies climate change. He just says that it's easier to deal with dictators than environmentalists, which is pretty, you know, what is that? What does that even mean?
It just means he's a moron.
No one's easy to deal with in this sort of world.
No.
This like climate change world.
No.
Like, I imagine an environmentalist would be difficult to work with, trying to explain to you that the world is ending, we need to change things if we want to survive, if we want our children's children to survive. Like, yeah, that's going to be difficult.
Right, because he's trying to grab everybody by the collar and say, listen to me.
Yeah, I'm warning you.
Things are not going well on Earth here, people.
Imagine the movie they'll make when everything gets back to normal in 1,000 years' time.
They still make movies, then.
Of course they will. Movies is just, it's the core of our life.
Well, then it's missing from my life because I don't care for them. Well, you know who I do care for is our guest. She's awesome.
She is.
She is she's on the midday on WRS on World Radio Switzerland. Her name is Kat Cullen. And we're on there Fridays.
We are.
But Kat is on there every day, Monday through Friday, midday show on WRS. She is from the UK. She was a trapeze artist.
Yeah, don't give away all the secrets.
I'm not. I'm just teasing. I'm whetting the appetite, as they say. I'm teasing the folks.
All right.
She was a trapeze artist. So let's get into her story. All right. And joining us now is Kat Cullen. And as we came to know Kat, you could find her middays on WRS. I would say your radio dial, but that dates me. So WRS is, it can be found all over Switzerland. And welcome, Kat. Thanks for coming on.
No worries, Don. Thanks for having me. Hi, Don. Hi, Susie.
G'day.
So, Kat, we want to kind of get into your journey to Switzerland. And I guess let's begin first off with how many years have you been in this country?
It's a total of 6 now. Yeah, it's 6. Oh my goodness.
Time flies, doesn't it?
Longer than I thought. Wow. Yeah, it's 6 years.
Okay, so what was it that got you to Switzerland?
Okay, so I have a confession to make. I never actually came to Switzerland for Switzerland. That was like a, let's just say it was like a happy accident that kind of happened. So I don't know if you've ever been to a little French town called Annecy, which is, I think it's probably like 45 minutes just south of Geneva. It's in France, and I was working in Australia where I met my French boyfriend, and then we were working in Australia for a bit together, and then we were working in Indonesia for a bit together, and then I thought, okay, do we go back to France or do we go back to the UK? And we decided to go back to France because I wanted to learn French. So I kind of didn't move to Switzerland. I moved to Annecy, and then I was looking for a job there, and I was like, okay, what am I going to do because I speak English? Is there a place where that is useful? It turned out it was really useful in Geneva. So that kind of was my journey to then going, okay, I'm going to work in Geneva now. That's what I'm going to do.
Now, you currently, like I said, you're now on the radio weekdays on WRS. Did you have much radio experience before you found a English-speaking radio station?
No, Don, no, I didn't. I had done a uni radio show. That was basically okay. It. And that radio show, by the way, we used to record on cassette tape.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm 34, so I mean, this was going back to when I was like 20, and I had a once a week radio show. It was a rock show, and we played rock and metal on a weekend. We got given a slot where no one cared if no one listened to us, on like a really late night kind of weekend show. So that was what I'd done before, but I like to think that my experience in sort of theatre and improv has helped me on this path.
So tell us a little bit about that experience, because you have quite an interesting background. You know, it's not just the radio and the uni radio slots once a week that you've got. You've got a really interesting background. Tell us about that.
I have a ridiculous CV, Susie. I do have a very silly CV. I thought that there would be some kind of consistency in it. I think there probably is. Okay, so tell me if this is a bit too chronological for you. Let's try. I did drama and theatre at uni, and then after doing that, I did that at Royal Holloway, which is a uni of London, but it's just sort of outside, really. It doesn't get to really call itself London. It doesn't count. And then I moved into London a couple of years later after I graduated, and it was to try and pursue the great career of acting, which essentially meant that I was doing loads of short indie films with people that were also going, I want to be a director one day, come and be in my film and do it for free, and then you'll have it for your showreel, yay. There's no pay involved. So we did that a lot. I was doing that for a good chunk of time, and then I decided to go travelling. I did a pilot episode for a show that, if it was going to get picked up by this channel, it was going to be really exciting. It was going to be my big break. And I was also working in marketing, organizing experiential events, like going around festivals and doing some fun stuff. And so it was a bit too officey for me, and I guess after a chunk of time I just kind of went, you know what, I'm going to go traveling. And then whilst I was traveling, I found the Flying Trapeze, which I guess is my next, which was my next career then. I found the Flying Trapeze in Thailand, really.
I was going to ask where, yeah. Thailand.
I dabbled in London, like I'd taken a couple of circus classes, and then found this Flying Trapeze in Thailand, and I just got completely hooked. And I wanted to do it every day. And in order to do it every day, I basically asked the person that was there, can you teach me how to start teaching people and helping you put on safety belts and stuff in exchange for free lessons, which worked. And Thailand's a great place to learn it, because every time that you just went, okay, I think I've got this now, I want to try it outside of safety lines, they would just go, yeah, okay, if you feel like you can do it outside of safety lines, go nuts. So that's what I did.
So let me just take you, go back just a little bit. So you were in London and there was a circus class.
Yeah.
Was you like, was it like, hey, I want to be a clown, I want to train bears, or I want to be on trapeze? Like, what is it? How did that entail? And then what is it about this trapeze that just hooked you?
I think my dad's responsible. My dad got me one of those gifts one time, like, you know, those experience days, that kind of thing, okay, where it's like, you can choose anything you want. You can go clay pigeon shooting, or you can try the flying trapeze. Anyway, I tried the flying trapeze in London at a circus school in Old Street. And yeah, they do it where you can go and you can learn the silks or the static trapeze, or they've got a flying trapeze. And I just started doing a once a week class thing. That's all I was doing in London. So at that point, it was not something that I ever thought, oh yeah, I'm going to go and perform this in Australia, and I'm going to go and perform this and like travel with it. When I was in London doing it, it was like this, you know, it was instead of the gym that I was going off and doing that. But then, yeah, I went to Thailand and found a way to do it every single day without using up all the savings, and spending very little every day. So that's how it then became, okay, well, this is actually feasible now. I could do this. And that was, by the way, that was when I was 26 too. So I was definitely not super bendy. Let's just say, like, you have to kind of start when you're about five, I think, if you're going to be super, super bendy and really great at circus. So I found it kind of later, but I was a bit athletic, so it was okay. I took to it.
Is that what brought you to Australia then? The trapeze?
I was flying.
Through the air.
Oh, I was flying through the air in many ways. I was just traveling for a while and got to Australia. And I applied for a job working in Club Med. After Thailand, I applied for a job working in Club Med, where they have a little trapeze school. And if you go to a Club Med, they've normally got these classes for kids and stuff. And I applied when I got there because I was like, I know how to put on safety belts and things, so I could probably do the Club Med stuff. And they never got back to me. And so I carried on traveling as I was, like literally just backpacking, not really knowing where I was going. And then I got all the way back to the UK. And then I got contacted by someone at Club Med that was like, hi, we got your application 6 months ago, we didn't need anyone then, but we need someone now. And I said, I'm back in the UK. And they went, so you're probably not interested. And I was like, no, hang on, yes I am. Tell me. I had another 6 months left on my working visa in Australia, so I upped and went straight back to Oz.
Okay, so now this is where we need to connect the dots here. How do you get from a trapeze artist to being on the radio every day in Geneva? How does that happen?
Oh, good question.
Well, thank you. Thought about that all by myself.
Okay, so I arrived in ANSI, and at first I was all about the trapeze because that's all I was thinking about at that time. And it felt so good. It felt really great to be, you know, super in control of your body. And basically it felt really good to just hang upside down all the time. And so I spoke to a few different trapeze schools in the area, and I was looking at seeing if I could teach, because it's obviously a lot easier to teach trapeze. It's like more of a daily income. Like there's a possibility of actually, you know, earning from that daily than just performing the trapeze. There's not much call for that on a day-to-day basis. So I went to a few different schools in the area, and of course not speaking French at the time was a massive issue, because everyone wanted to learn in French and I couldn't speak it. And it's kind of dangerous, you know, when you can't sort of go, don't let go just yet, or hang on a minute, or there's something like urgent that you need to say. So I was really looking for something else, and I did some bar work for a bit. That was good, in a bar in France. And
the best of us have done bar work.
Hey, it's awesome. It was really good as well, because, you know, I started to learn the French vocabulary that was involved in bar work, you know, like a lot of the alcohol and ordering and stuff, and it was a good place to start. So I learned French, and I still am learning words every day, but I can speak French now. So, you know, 6 years in the region, so that's really cool. But that was really kind of where I started. And then the radio, I was just desperate to get involved. And I got involved in an improv group, actually. I was so keen to get involved in radio and found out that, that WRS was here, and I used to listen to it all the time when I was in the car and think, oh, it'd be really cool, I'd love to do a show on that. And then I was actually part of an improv group, a group of people that were doing these little skits and coming together and just like practicing improv every week, and we started doing shows and stuff. And the WRS actually contacted my improv group. They actually reached out to us to find someone to help them with a kind of an April Fool's stunt that they were doing one year. And so I got involved in that, and that was kind of my way in. And then the rest is sort of history, really. From that point on, I then started sort of coming in a little bit more. I volunteered for a long time and then eventually got my own show, and then it became a full-time job, and then became producer here as well. So things just sort of developed over time. But it was really like elbowing my way in and saying that I'd work for free for a little bit that sealed the deal.
That's kind of what, how we met, Don and I. We had to kind of volunteer for radio and then did the podcast thing. So it's the way in, isn't it?
But unlike Kat, we had to buy Mark Butcher a bottle of liquor to be able to go on air every Friday.
Yeah, we had to bribe him.
So it wasn't just talent, it was just complete bribery.
Exactly. And actually, yeah. Listening to Mark on the radio, your co-host, I'm assuming he was in charge of that April Fool's joke that you got involved in.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. He doesn't surprise me at all.
And each year we try and come up with something a little bit better. So just stay tuned for April. Watch out.
So what is your show like on WRS?
The show is mainly about events that are going on, which is a really nice position to be in because I get to find out lots about what is going on. And there's so much out there. If you know the right places to look, if you do look, and it's music, it's news, it's the weather and the traffic because it's live, because we can, so we throw that in there as well, but largely about events and interviews with people that are organizing festivals or doing shows and dance classes, and there's just loads about what's happening out there, which means it's really interesting for me. I get to find out about people's lives, and people are really excited to talk about what they do and what they most enjoy. So people tend to be quite keen to talk about it, which is just really lovely. It's an absolute pleasure for me.
And you get to go to some really awesome places. Just recently you were in, where was it, Gdansk?
Gstaad,
yeah.
Gstaad.
Sorry.
Yeah,
you're so good at all of the names. You can say them all. I listen very intently, and my aim is to one day be able to say them all like you. But, you know, like, you're at the top of a mountain, you know, in a fancy hotel getting wined and dined, you know, all to do with radio. Like, that must be so much fun.
Susie, it's so much fun. It's exhausting. It is so tiring. Like, we turned up, we'd done an entire show in the morning, and then you're like, go, 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 the whole afternoon setting up, the evening is busy, you're checking the place out. And the saddest thing is, like, you've only got 24 hours in that place, and you're moving so fast, but you're like, okay, we've got to check this out. Okay, now we've got to eat, now we've got to sleep. We're up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Go, go, go. But we got to talk to so many good people. We were in Gstaad, was it last week or the week before? And we were in Anzer. And then at the end of last year, we were in Nonda. And that's just for the ski season. So yeah. Those are just some great places that we get to go and explore. Yeah, that massive perk of the job. I love doing those.
I'm still a little bit bitter, just a little bit, that I didn't win the giveaway that WRS had for that ski trip. But, you know, just a tiny bit, not a lot.
Just a little. Yeah. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah.
Not going to hold it against you guys, not at all. Now, I just want to, this is a question we ask a lot of our guests, because a lot of the people that we speak to on Swisspats, you know, come to Switzerland and learn or try to learn German. And Don and I both are terrible. I've been here for 4 years, Don's been here for two, and we both know practically no German at all, despite our efforts. But you mentioned
efforts in quotes.
Yeah, you mentioned learning French. How was that for you? Was it difficult, or was it like because you really wanted to learn? Or, you know, tell us about that process.
I really wanted to learn. And cheat here, to be all honest about it. I did my French A level, but it was the worst. It was the worst result that I got out of all of them. And when I arrived, I still couldn't hear a French person talk and distinguish one word from the next. Because when we learnt French at A-level, we read from a Maupassant book, which is, you know, the equivalent of Shakespeare, but French. And you would read, and you'd each go round and you'd read, like, one paragraph, but you'd have it in front of you, so you could see it as well. When I actually heard a French person speak, I was like, I've got no clue, no clue. I could not write down what that person has just said, because it sounds like one really long word. And then I learnt it, I would say, with my French partner at the time when I first arrived, around a poker table, probably.
Oh, that's an interesting way to learn.
That's probably how, I mean, I learned in the casino bar that I was working at. Yeah, it was in a casino. And so at that bar was pretty good. And then also around a poker table with a bunch of guys. And so I learnt the colloquial French. And I still remembered from the A-level, like, some of the more professional business French. Things like, en ce qui concerne, like, I'm writing you this letter concerning this particular topic, which I would say when I first arrived, like, I know how to say that, but I don't actually know how to say, oh, God, that's so annoying. Like, I had to learn all of that really colloquial stuff that people actually use day to day. And in the, you know, in the first week or so, that was the kind of stuff that I learned all the time, was all that chit chat stuff, or like, oh, you're annoying me. That's like, oh, what? All of that stuff that you just, of course, never get when you're learning at school. I turned up and I really could, like, mon nez and mes pieds would be like my nose and my feet. And of course, that's not how you pronounce it at all. It's mon nez et mes pieds. It's completely different. But, you know, I turned up with really quite terrible French. And I wanted to learn. I wanted to be able to listen to people that thought that I couldn't understand them and sit at the table in a restaurant speaking English and quietly just be able to listen to their conversation, because I'm nosy. I'm curious.
That is the one thing that drives me to learn German, is when I'm on a tram or doing something they perceive as wrong and they're telling me that, I want to be able to respond to them. Now I just kind of like nod my head and put my tail between my legs and slink away. So I guess that would be kind of a driving thing for me. My question, when it comes to the French in Geneva and the English speaking aspect, because there are a lot of English speaking people in Geneva, I mean, is it a town where you can get away with not knowing much French, or is it really that much different once you have just a somewhat handle on the language, being able to navigate the city?
I think you can get away with it. I do, actually. I know people that have been here for over a decade and still don't speak very much. I think you can get away with it, but it's just how much you want to. I think it enriches the experience of being in a place if you can get to know more locals and be in a place where you can go between languages. I think that really helps. It's why I want to get better at French. Like, I'm still not perfect at it. There's still words all the time. I'm learning new vocab, because until a certain thing like breaks in your car, you don't know the French word for it, and then suddenly it breaks in your car and you're like, oh, okay, I know what that word is now.
It's always nice to be able to have a conversation with your neighbour about the recycling. That's what I base the, you know, the goal, be able to have a conversation with my neighbour.
Yeah, it's also really nice to know, like, if you're signing a form, like, what that form says and what you're signing away your rights to, or something
exactly.
Like that, you know.
It's so true. Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knows what I've signed away since I came to Switzerland.
Oh, I just sign here? Yeah, sure.
Yes, exactly. That'll do. Yep. Organ, like, harvesting. Yep, I'll just sign that.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah. Is this where it's signed? Yeah, I'm in.
So you had the background before you kind of found the trapeze of acting, and how much of that do you use still on a daily basis when that light goes on and you're on air? I mean, is there similarities between, you know, being on the stage and being behind the mic that you found, or is that just like the trapeze artist, just kind of a different aspect of your life and they don't really kind of connect?
I think it's all performative. Like everything on the CV is about performance, really. So that is what I think connects even the trapeze aspect of what I do and also being on the radio and then theatre. But I tell you what part of theatre is I still use and is really connected to radio is that improv side of things. We're a really small team at WRS and so we do a lot based on like a certain order in the morning so that we're not just completely that there's this framework, you know, that we fit to each morning. So we know that at 10 past 8 we're doing this, at 20 past 8 we're doing that, at 7:40 that's the segment that we've got, so that people are waking up to a certain level of continuity when they listen into the show, that this is what happens at this certain time, which is the case on a lot of most morning shows. But also it's just improv, that's what we're doing. Like most of the time we just go, okay, let's banter about this subject, like this ridiculous thing happened yesterday or this stupid thing is going viral, so let's just banter about it. And the one lesson that is in improv that I think has helped me in my life, and it's every single day that I use it with WRS and radio, is in improv, like you just learn to, if you've just made a mistake on stage, if you've just screwed up, like you just go, okay, I did that and now I have to forget it. Otherwise, if I focus on it, I'm just going to keep screwing up. So now I have to forget it and just think about the future. I think I use that lesson every day because I might mess up or like screw up my words or something might not come out as fluid as I want it to. Fluidly as I wanted to, did you see? And you just kind of go, okay, you know what, it didn't work, never mind, move on, next.
You're saying your short-term memory is not as good. I mean, there's things that you could do to really enhance losing your short-term memory, and some of it's actually legal in Switzerland, in case we'll talk off air, but there are things.
Thanks, Don. I don't know what you're talking about. What
yeah, I know.
No,
see, okay, there's just a short-term memory loss, there it goes.
I'm saying, like, it's really useful. You have to be able to go, you know what, that wasn't what I wanted it to be. It's the same with anyone that does, like, public speaking or whatever. You know, okay, this might not have been perfect, but I did it. Now I'm moving on. I've got the next 10 minutes to fill. Go. And I learned that in improv, and I use that lesson every damn day.
That sounds like something that you could teach me, because that's a lesson I definitely need I need while doing the podcast that we do. You mentioned very briefly earlier about doing improv in Geneva. Tell us about how you got involved in that, in specifically in Geneva, and how you continue with it today.
That's a group called the Renegade Saints. Can I plug them?
Yeah, please do.
Yeah.
Because I told you I've got to get down and get some lessons.
Do it. Come on, Susie. Yes. So the Renegade Saints were just a bunch of people about 4 years ago. It might even be more than that now. We were a group of people that were just really interested in doing improv. And there was a couple of classes maybe like to do using improv skills, how to become more confident, better at public speaking, that kind of thing. And there was a certain little group of us that were going, oh, what about, you know, doing a show, like a comedy show with this, kind of Whose Line Is It Anyway style. I don't know if you remember that show, that American TV show.
Of course, the guy Drew Carey, who is from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hey.
The great city of Cleveland, Ohio. Anyway, sorry.
Do you have a link with that, Don?
Susie just gets annoyed every time I talk about Cleveland, Ohio, or golf, or sports. So
I don't get annoyed. I love it.
Yeah, she rolls her eyes. You can hear her rolling her eyes. Anyway, that's. I just wanted to jump in and add that little fact.
Okay. Cool. Where was I even going with it? Oh,
Whose Line It Is Anyway? That's kind of what. So, Renegade Saints is all about.
Yeah, we put a little show, very similar to that kind of thing, just together, and it works really well. And we only charge like 10 francs at the door, which is a bargain in Switzerland. And so we just got this venue in a Pickwick's pub downstairs, and it works. So we've just kept turning up every month. And we just do that every month now. It's so much fun. And then the group have started doing drop-ins so you can go and learn improv and classes and stuff as well. So it's so much fun just to meet up with those people. And then those people have also just become my best friends as well. So that's another reason to keep showing up all the time.
Aw, such a nice story.
Aw.
Well, Kat, we appreciate you coming on and telling your story. I mean, it's, you know, it's not often we got a actress / trapeze artist / radio personality on Swiss Pats. I think you're the first. I'll have to go back and check.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me know.
Might be the first. Might be the first.
So has anyone else had like such a messy CV as me? Like this seems.
Yeah, but like you said, it all kind of.
It does all fit. I would say that mine is a little bit messy because I've gone from being a police officer in England to now having a podcast and being on WRS on Fridays. Like, that's kind of, at least yours links. Mine, there's no link between the police except for I did have a radio on my shoulder.
Yes, there it is.
That's the only link.
Radio communications, concise.
Exactly.
And efficient. So,
we've all got messy CVs.
And I have no redeemable qualities, so that's, I got nothing.
Cleveland, Ohio, maybe? Is that?
I do have some love for Cleveland, Ohio, yes. And Drew Carey, he's got a special place in my heart.
Good.
That's all I got. All right, Kat, well, thanks so much for joining us. As always, they can listen to you. Tell people when they can listen to you on WRS.
Okay, my show is The Mid-Morning Mix. It's Monday to Friday. It's 10 till 12. I'm also on The Breakfast Show, which starts at 6:30. I'm on from 7:20 a.m. every morning. It's on WRS. It's on DAB+, and you can listen to it as well at worldradio.ch/player.
Whew, you got some. You must be a morning person.
I've said that a few times.
Yeah.
Just once or twice.
All right. Well, thank you, Kat. Thanks for coming on. It was a blast.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Thanks, Kat. So before we get to another story, we want to just mention a big shout out to Jonathan Martin, whose Facebook page is a, are you ready for it?
Go.
A Shropshire lad in Switzerland.
Yep.
How did that sound?
You're getting better.
Okay.
Yep.
So follow this page on Facebook, please. Susie, how do you spell that? Shropshire.
Shropshire.
Thank you. Give his page a follow. He updates constantly throughout the week on all the news in English happening in Switzerland. He's a great resource for our podcast and also a good friend who needs to buy me a beer soon. So thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah, thanks. What do you got?
I don't know. What do you got?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I got this week's story.
Yeah.
I actually have three stories for you.
Oh, geez. All right.
Yeah, but they're all about the same thing. So, you know.
I'm going to
condense. As you know, I like to get myself into a little bit of criminal trouble with the whole car speeding thing. But I'm not the only one. Would you believe it?
No.
Now, there has been a policeman who was speeding while he was chasing someone. So he was on a high speed pursuit and it was somebody who'd robbed an automatic teller machine, ATM for everybody else. Mm-hmm. And the guy got flashed in his police car and he got sent a 600 franc ticket. And he decided that doesn't seem fair. I was doing my job. I was in the, you know, in the throes of punishment giving. And I shouldn't receive a punishment myself for that.
Yeah.
And the court said, sorry, you have to pay it.
Wait a minute here. This guy, what did they want him to do? Just let the guy who robbed the bank free?
Well, I don't know. What did they want him to do?
It's a great question, Don.
Yeah. So he was actually caught twice during the pursuit. The first occasion he was doing 30 over the speed limit, and the second he was doing 42 kilometers over the speed limit. So they decided that the first one was okay. It was in line with tactical requirements. But they decided that 42 kilometers over the speed limit was a gross breach of traffic regulations. And for that one speeding
infraction, he was fined 600 francs.
They're so fanatical about the speed limit in this country. I just imagine, like, when there is a car chase, most of the time, 99% of the time, everybody's just going the speed limit.
Right.
You know, like, oh, here comes a tunnel. I'm going to slow down to 100 kilometers. Here comes a red light.
Better wait. Yeah. Don't want to get a fine.
The guy behind, the lights are flashing. The robber's just sitting there.
Yeah.
Letting the old lady cross the street.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm sure that's exactly how it happens in Switzerland. So basically, the court said that the speed during a high-speed chase needs to be proportionate. So you have to make a decision as a police officer what is proportionate and what is not. And
he decided that
was not proportionate.
Your job is to catch the bad guy. Go catch the bad guy. I don't care how you do it. Catch the bad guy.
Catch the bad guy. Well, listen, high-speed chases are very, very dangerous. Often, people get hurt that are not involved.
Correct.
So sometimes it's not safe to catch the bad guy. Sometimes it's safer to let the bad guy go. It's controversial, but it's true. I'm sticking to it.
I'm just trying to think what things I could do then. What can I get away with?
I mean, I'm not going to catch you for anything. I'm not a police officer anymore, so I don't care what you do.
Okay.
Yeah. As long as you don't rob my house, I don't care. Well, I do care. Don't hurt anyone. So talking about catching the bad guys, there's a man that was caught in Thurgau. He was doing 249 kilometers on the A7, which is 122 kilometers over the speed limit.
That's fast.
That is really fast. So he actually lives in Basel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But he shouldn't be driving anymore.
I would hope not. That's excessive.
If you do 117 kilometers over the speed limit and then the police take your driver's license, do you think that you would care about that? I'm sure you'd still get behind the wheel if you've got such disregard to go 100 kilometers over the speed limit. But when he was stopped and he was his license was taken away on the spot, he was allowed to leave. So I guess him and his girlfriend walked back to Basel from Thurgau.
Public transportation's good. Hop on a train.
I mean, it's not that great from the A7.
Well, yeah.
But
I love the fact that this is what kills me. Our friends at World Radio Switzerland, the little dig is most impressively, he was driving a seat.
Yeah. Which
is, if you've seen those cars, they're not a high performance machine.
Well, no, they're not exactly like sports cars, are they?
No. And he got that thing 250 kilometers an hour. That's a little impressive. I'm not going
to
lie.
That is impressive. I do just want to, before I tell you my third story, make a little point that I grew up believing it was called a siet, not a seat.
Oh, it could be.
I don't know. I actually don't know.
S-E-A-T, I see seat, but as we've determined earlier in this podcast, I probably pronounced it
horribly wrong. I wonder what it is. I actually don't know. I just, when you said it, I was like, oh, I thought it was Siat. A seat. Yeah.
Siat?
Yeah.
Like fiat, but siat. Mm. Okay.
Yeah, now this one is another speeding story. An Australian man is going to maybe go to jail for speeding.
Do you know him?
I mean, obviously, I know all Australians.
Probably related to the guy.
So this happened in 2015. He was driving a rented sports car and he was flashed doing 107 in a 50 zone.
Ooh.
That's pretty fast.
Through a 50 zone? That's moving.
Yeah, 50. Yeah. Like, I think it goes 30 zone is a residential area.
Mm-hmm.
50 is a built up, wider residential area, like
a main street road. Yeah, through the streets, city streets.
So you still have the potential of pedestrians, kids,
yeah,
bike riders. So, you know, 107 in a 50 zone is pretty far. Disappointed in my Australian brother here. But he left the country, so he didn't pay his fine. And then he came back. First mistake.
Yeah,
if you're going to be a criminal, be a smart one. So he came back, and as soon as he got...
Wearing a fake mustache and yeah, glasses.
Yeah. As soon as he got back into the country, his passport was taken off him, and they said, 8,000 francs, please. That was just to stay out of jail. This is where I would stay in jail. I'd be like, 8 grand or a couple of days in jail, I'll take jail.
Yeah, 8 grand's a... That's a hefty fine.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had people, we've done stories of people gone for like 100 franc fines. They've gone to jail.
Right.
Right. And then some old guy just turned himself in just to spend the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. Some guy in his 70s or 80s or something.
Get away from his wife.
It's just a story about you. So this guy, this Australian guy, he's not allowed to leave Switzerland until he's paid or he's he ought to be sentenced. And he could be sentenced up to a year.
Wow. Like I said, man, they that's don't not a couple mess
of days.
Around.
That's not a couple of days in prison.
Years, yeah. That's intense. They don't mess around with speeding in this country.
It depends what you do for a living. Like, could you take a year off?
Yeah, I could.
Yeah, like you and I could both just be like, yeah, sure, we'll spend a year in jail.
Yeah, well, they'll visit us.
I think we downplay how bad it probably is in jail, regardless of how good it is.
Yeah, it's still jail.
It's still the removal of your freedom.
Right, and that would still suck.
Right.
Most of the time. I mean, look, we were both married and have kids, so freedom is walked out the door a long time ago. Yeah.
What is this F word you're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So don't speed, guys. Even if you're a police officer. It's not good.
No. Even if you're trying to catch a bad guy.
Right.
Go the speed limit. That is one thing I would tell somebody moving to this country.
Don't speed.
Don't speed.
I think it's a very, very good point. Like, I never got a ticket when I was in the UK. Ever. Not once. And when I came to Switzerland, ticket after ticket after ticket arrived in the post.
I still get them for going like 5 kilometers over.
Right.
I don't learn.
I'm trying to. I'm trying to be a better person behind the wheel.
That's good. We should all try to be better people
right.
in this world. Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining another episode of Swiss Pats. I'd like to thank Kat Cullen for joining us from WRS. You can listen to us Friday mornings on WRS, by the way. Susie and I talk about what is going on in the German-speaking areas of this fine country.
Yeah.
Every Friday morning on the Breakfast Show with Mark Butcher. You can also download our weekly podcast at Apple Podcasts, on Player FM, on Google Play, Spotify, all the places. We are on social media, swisspats.com. Which is just a website, but then the social media, which is facebook.com/SwissPats, Instagram at SwissPats, and Twitter at SwissPatsPod.
Yeah, tweet us.
Tweet us.
Yeah, do it.
Thanks for joining us. For Susie, I'm Don. Yummy,